What's up, guys? Ziggy from the Power of Positivity here with a Power of Podativity special. Join me as I speak with special guest Mia Finelli on her latest innovation of audio technology, Ola. So Mia, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Ola, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. So Ola, so tell us, what is Ola exactly?
So Ola, it came from my own struggles understanding frequency and track masking. And it's a way that we can receive data in every sensory output, so physical and visual, at the point of control. So you can sit there, move the fader, and have the levels underneath your fingertips, whether that be in nice colored lights or very specific precision vibrations through haptic.
That's awesome. Now, there's a word specifically for that that we discussed before the podcast today, and I mispronounced it about 10 times. I think you said it was synesthesia. Explain, what is synesthesia? What do you experience that most people don't?
Synesthesia, and more particularly the, I guess, strand I have, is chromesthesia. So I experience sound, and all external sound, not just music, as colors, shapes, textures, even sometimes tastes, in the sense that I'll salivate or I'll get like a really like residual. Sometimes I don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
But you would think that that would be really stimulating and creative, but it's kind of stifling at times.
Yeah, I can imagine it can be a little like overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I'm imagining because of that, you probably realized this pretty early on. When exactly did you realize your brain could do this?
I thought for a while everyone's brain could, until one day I was sitting with my uncle, well, everybody at Thanksgiving, but more particularly, he had asked, can you see an apple in your mind? And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, people can just picture an apple and they see it there. I'm like, well, yeah. Well, what do you want the apple to look like? He's like, well, shiny red. And I'm like, is it on a white table with a tablecloth? Are there windows behind it? He's like, you see all that? I'm like, I do. He's like, wow, I don't see any of that. And that got me thinking, how different is my brain? And that was probably around like 15, 16 years old.
Wow. So that was kind of like your hypothesis moment in the scientific world, where you're like, if I can see this, it probably translates to a lot of other fields in life. And I think being a creative in the music industry is a perfect path, obviously, for someone like you, as you've made some pretty incredible innovations in the audio technology world. But that leads me to my next question is, how can you describe like what a specific sound, like a kick drum or a snare drum or a guitar would look like to you?
Well, there's this one, I guess, Claire de Lune, that always gives me the most vivid visuals without any lyrics or anything like that. And I would say just the violins in that particularly too, if once you get to like the more symphonic cover of it, I see twinkling stars like falling from the sky. But then I'll also feel like a cold breeze from an ocean or from like, you know, a foggy moon.
Yeah.
And it all just kind of hits me in about 30 seconds. I get an entire imagery. I could have a movie, an entire movie script kind of played out in my head before even the third or fourth note is played in a song.
Wow.
But then there's the ones that are really disturbing, where let's say the more metal music, if it's not cohesively sonic, then I am getting more like metal, kind of like, you know, when you kind of get that metal taste in the back of your
ear. Yes.
Yeah, something like that. Or like your claw, your jaw clenches.
Yeah.
And you're like, ugh. Things of that nature will happen. Physical, like, happenings, which is even strange sometimes.
So would you say having that form of synesthesia has influenced your personal music taste based off how you receive those notes and those timbres, if you will?
I would definitely say so. I mean, the first, once I realized what it was and got through the I'm different phase, what is this?
Yeah.
I started to realize it is a tool, and I was able to teach myself music because of it. My mind would just kind of place the next proper note or sound, or, you know, it would finish for me in a way. And I would then go back later and be like, oh, I played that, because I get so lost. Hence why Ola is great, because it created a center of focus for me when, you know, your whole career is listening to sounds and not just one sound once, one sound 100 times, you know, or the same track or the same riff. So,
wow. So from what I've heard so far, because it's funny because I think a lot of people look at all types of things like synesthesia, for one, as almost like a quirk or a disability or something that holds you back. But I think for you and a lot of other people like you, it's more of a design advantage. Did you come to a realization of that early on? Has that been a more recent thing since Ola's kind of launching? Or
You know what's funny? Synesthesia has always been kind of glorified because the celebrities that do have it are very successful. John Batiste, Pharrell, Cynthia Erivo. Cynthia, for example, explains it as this very glorious happening, and it's so whimsical and, you know, mysterious and unique. But for those where it's affecting a lot more senses and it's kind of crosswired a lot more intricately, it is a burden, and you have to learn how to work with it, or, you know, then you have to learn how to hone your craft, so to speak. And that's kind of when I realized when I merged the two worlds, music and my neurodivergence, I was able to create something that could help not just myself, but other people with different cognitive or sensory issues.
That is just so interesting. So one thing that I feel like a lot of us would want to ask our favorite innovators in numerous different industries is, what was the moment that you decided, like, I need this in the world because it doesn't exist yet?
Well, it was the last summer. I was having a difficulty kind of really pinpointing, understanding frequency masking and spatial placement, you know, especially with Atmos. Okay. And I needed to really just put my hands around it. I was like, there has to be a way. And why isn't there a way already that you don't have to open a spectral analyzer, that you don't have to look at a screen and move this and move that and click your mouse, that you could just move your hands and it tells you? Why is it such a workaround? And I realized because all of the industries that, you know, kind of are required to put this together, they're so separated. You know, people who work with haptics and, you know, motors don't think about necessarily how they could correlate to audio in a precision way. Some of, you know, lights have always kind of been more of an entertainment feature on consoles. And then I started thinking, well, there has to be other companies who have thought of this, not even in an audio way. And then I realized, no, there isn't, because I'm thinking of it in the sense coming from an audio engineering standpoint, where, you know, we have basic mathematics that deliver our sound waves and frequencies and kind of give it to us in data that's tangible. You know, that's what we were taught for, you know, the first 2 years of our education was
right.
Basically how we manipulate frequencies to be data into a computer. And I was like, why can't we just manipulate that data out of the computer right back out into our fingertips? So when I realized, when I actually put it to, like I said, you know, I'm going to solidify this idea. It was my birthday in like December 2025.
Wow.
And then I filed the first patent on Christmas Eve, 11:55 p.m. So
that's crazy. So on your birthday, you gave the rest of the world a present.
I thought I could, and then I waited till Christmas Eve to deliver it. But
wow.
I had to really sit there and ask myself and ask the internet and really do some research because I couldn't believe I had stumbled upon something. But then the more I read about it, it was exactly because of my chromesthesia and my neurological makeup that this is why I was able to kind of conceptualize it,
right?
Which has been hard to internalize for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely imposter syndrome.
So the first question, well, the last question I just asked you about what everyone at home listening is probably thinking, what they wish they could ask innovators. I feel like you mentioned Atmos earlier, Dolby Atmos. Does the positioning of where the audio comes from also affect, like, what you see? Like, if – because panning used to be left and right, but if you hear something behind you, does it look different than being in front of you, whether it's left or right?
And you mean in terms of my synesthesia?
Yes.
Yeah. That's crazy you say that, because if you put a rumbling, like, low end behind me, right, I almost feel lifted in a way. And then I just – that's like a bass. And I hear it. but it more just sets like an undertone. It's like a humming, right? And then it leaves like levels for other sounds that are higher up and to the left and the right to like be more present, where normally, you know, you have your lower end kind of drives your track sometimes, so to speak. I also feel it, which is kind of strange. I will feel it where it is. Like I'll get that tingliness in my body somewhere. I'm like, oh, wow, those strings came from the left. And it's immediate. But, you know, you ask me to do that in a computer and map it out, it's so hard.
Yeah, and that's kind of – that gives us a lot of hope, I think, in the music industry that analog is never really going to disappear, because a lot of what you're depending on in a way is kind of analog. Not all of it, as what you're inventing also is digital, but a lot of it also depends on analog aspects.
I mean, that's where it comes from, because we can't get – well, I can't get the signal I need without analog first.
Right.
So that's – I kind of laugh because it's like merging a lot of worlds into one. It's merging the old world tech and new world tech together, but then it's also a different types of people in this industry who might not have been included. And that's not even with neurodivergence or disability. I mean, let's just say you're tired one day, or maybe you're losing your hearing after 30 years, but you don't want to admit it. And it's something that causes you extra work time, you know, later in post. But now you don't have to, you know, take that extra time because you have the information right then and there.
Exactly. So let's segue from the music multiverse that you are currently creating, and let's get to what is behind that musical multiverse. So walk me through what Ola actually does in plain terms, and not just the pitch version, but the real version.
Ola gives you the ability to receive the data, and any kind of data, but for right now we'll say frequency, audio waves, in any sensory output you prefer. So if that's physical, you want all of that to be physical, you can just close your eyes and let your hands do the work. If you don't want to feel any of that, but you want to see it and be more, you know, technical that way, you can turn off the haptics and kind of just watch what your hands are doing, but still see the data that's coming back. I would say it's just it's a translation system. It's bringing like machines and humans together in a way that I think has been overlooked with AI coming in to the scene. I feel like it's kind of connecting us back to, okay, machine does this, we know exactly what it's doing, when it's doing, and it also knows what we're doing.
Right.
So we're it's, I don't know, a communication loop in a sense. That might have been a very, very detailed explanation and not for the person at Everidge Home, and I think that's what I've been struggling with too, because it's so close to home for me.
Right.
It's just like, it's just the way I translate things, I don't know, because my senses are always so overloaded.
Well, I think a long detailed explanation is kind of perfect, because if you think about a pitch version, you have a clock right above you that gives you exactly how much time you have. But here today, for everyone listening at home or in their car, wherever they may be, they can have a very detailed explanation of what this is. And if they tuned into this, that's exactly what they're looking for.
Thank you.
To hear that insider information. But you did mention the physical part, the haptic part. What exactly is that doing?
So haptics are the motors in your phone. Pick up your phone, right? And you know how it shakes when you get a text message, or if you touch a certain part of the screen when you're playing a game, it vibrates. Those are haptic motors. Right now, in our phones, they're a little bit limited. They're not too precision-based. But what Ola is able to do is make the motor follow you, so it's not predetermined. So you're not walking up to point A, bam, it shakes. You are walking with it, and wherever you go, it's going to shake with you if you're getting closer to a perimeter or what have you, in any facet, a video game or audio volume control.
That's very interesting. Now, I know we kind of discussed this a little bit before in the first part of our podcast here today, but who is this actually for? Is it just you? Is there a bigger group of people that this is for? I mentioned you kind of said it helps everybody, but go into some more detail about everybody. How can it help all of us exactly?
Well, you think about a lot of people who don't have every sense necessarily available at the ready to them. So we can start with blind and deaf engineers or any blind and deaf individual who wants some data in a sense and in a delivery system that they don't already receive it in. Again, like people with neurological differences, like neurotypical, even in neurodivergent, are able to kind of get information in ways that maybe they weren't before. And it kind of opens, it might open up creative channels, it might open up a different workflow, give you more time to do other things. And alternatively, anyone who just wants to feel what inclusion is like and see and feel it, but not the part that has, you know, X people out for so long. Everyone kind of feels and sees the same thing in whatever sense they want to. So it's kind of eliminating the channels of your sensory experience and just making it cross-modal, which is kind of how I was wired.
Right. And that leads me to my next point, or my next question, rather. You say that this is how you're wired, and it's how you've always been. You've always experienced sounds and sights and smells and tastes the way that you have. But how would you explain this form of sensory translation to someone much younger who has not reached the point of being able to define their experiences as you have, honestly, just recently with your innovations?
I would say that sensory translation is teaching a machine to feel what I see and to give me the information I'm giving the machine, but give it back to me in several different outputs. In a more layman's terms, it's just the way that your mind is taking in all the external stimulus. And sometimes, you know, touch isn't wired to your hands. Sometimes colors aren't wired to sight. So it's an interesting concept for a 10-year-old me. Right. As you and I were discussing off mic, a lot of my experiences that I had when I was younger, I was confused about and I didn't understand until later, identifying that that was synesthesia.
Yeah. And it's funny because I know a lot of people at home listening to this podcast are wondering the same thing I am. So I'll ask you here while I have you. During this whole interview, which thank you again for joining us and being here today, I've been trying to understand what you see, what you feel, what you hear. Like, I'm trying to imagine what it's like to have synesthesia, but obviously that's not quite possible. So for those of us who are trying to understand what you see, what is the main thing we're missing that we're just not understanding?
I think it's just like an instant download of every sensory input kind of being taken in all at once. So you have to sit there. Your mind has to be able to kind of quickly determine what is what and where and why and how, especially when you're in these environments where your ears need to be trusted. So I think a lot of it is just this instant download of way too much information. Like you, for example, our music projects we did a couple semesters ago where we had to pick a painting and, you know, make music off that.
Right.
That kind of thing works oppositely, but almost instantly for me. You could play me a couple notes and I have that image in my head or that scene. So it's something that it kind of infiltrates my brain. And what I really want people to understand about it is it's an additional layer of kind of deciphering and decoding, because, again, you're dealing with a lot more than neurotypical.
Yeah. So in a way, we're trying to catch up to your brain when our brain just is not wired the same way. As you said, it's just how you're wired.
Yeah. I mean, it's catch up, but it's slow down, right? Because my whole life, as again, I was saying to you, I've had to create new sets of instructions to get the same things done as everyone else. So I spent my whole life catching up, but now it's that kind of click moment where I'm like, oh, wait, this is why. Because I had to learn how to use it. I had to learn to live with it. And I had to understand it to then be able to use what some would call a disability. But I think of like a motivating gift to be able to create something that can expand beyond just what I have.
Well, some will say disability, and then some will say disability. And I think the latter applies to you and your innovation so far. I said we're trying to catch up to your brain, right? Would you say that Ola is almost using like tools of the world in the music industry to catch up to your brain? Or would you say it's more so that Ola is translating your brain for us so that we can understand you better?
I think Ola is definitely an extension of my brain. It is the way I process things. But then in turn, it's a tool to help me process things, because not only does it give me the information, but then it gives me channels to kind of calm myself down. So I'm not overstimulated with, you know, visuals or that all the senses are touched, so that you at least have some equilibrium. I would say, though, it's a lot of people, because it doesn't translate just one way. You know, it works for whoever, wherever, however they are. And I really wanted to create something that would just meet anybody where they are, so that there wasn't any kind of instruction manual that they couldn't pick up and follow.
Yeah, and it's more than just two groups, too, because I noticed I kind of said like a brain like yours and then a brain like ours. There's more than just two types of brains, right? So looking at the bigger picture here, what did building this technology do for you as far as understanding how different all of our brains actually are, like on an individual level?
It made me realize there's beauty where people dismiss often. You'll see some, especially in kind of conceptualizing, I did get a little bit quiet and reclusive. And then I started to realize people keep something that they don't understand fully, but they know is potentially helpful, close to their heart, especially if they don't know how to properly convey that to the world. And that's a lot of neurotypical or differently abled people. So for me, it was kind of learning about myself and then also learning about other people who have been excluded, that you kind of just think of, oh yeah, that's a blind and deaf person, or blind or deaf person. But when you really get to see somebody work in their studio when they're blind and they're making MIDI and compositions on Ableton quicker than you can even think of where to start.
Right.
It's really motivating, and it's almost astounding, because they're doing it with a screen reader blasting in their ear, right? So there's that whole thing of sensory translation. They've had to adapt to a different way of work just because this is the only way they were given to do it. So Ola is opening up the options and saying, you don't have to have this robotic voice screaming at you to go down menu 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, click 1, 2. Like, it's crazy. And I thought I had a hard time in the studio. And, you know, seeing that, I realized I am so far on the scale in terms of capability that there's people who have less who are doing way more. And I can't imagine what they could do if they had a tool that was for them.
So that brings not only more efficiency, but it also improves workflow astronomically.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you last said about MIDI, about how it'll say like MIDI 1, 2, 3, 4, but they have different ways of going about it now, right? Like, it's more than just information. It's how we're perceiving it, how we're translating it in the technology to these people who may have, and I don't want to say the word disability necessarily, because again, it's kind of disability, but they have different, maybe not shortcomings, but different ways that they perceive something, that the way we do it in the most common way is harder for them than for us. So I think what's very interesting is, and how I'd like to segue to my next question to you, is we have knowing and feeling, because we have the information and how we perceive it. So I don't want to ask you, what do you want someone listening to know, but what do you want someone to leave feeling from listening to this?
Included. I just want people to say, the bigger picture is that it's meant to make everyone feel like they're part of the room, and that they don't have to mentally, internally, quietly struggle, and that they won't be excluded from an industry because they were wired different, or, you know, they have a different perspective or a different thought of how things work better for them.
And if Ola didn't exist, what do you think you would be doing now? How do you think you would have gone about your day-to-day life in the program here at Monco or in your life in the studio?
Here at Monco, that is where I feel like if I didn't come here, Ola wouldn't exist, because I wasn't asking myself those questions about recall or, you know, like all these innovations. But we have Tom Dowd, his fader, amazing, right? All of, and Les Paul, all of these innovations, but we kind of just stopped, and then they are what they are and they work really well. And so I think the catalyst was coming to Monco, because I loved music and I was a musician. I was never on the tech side. What I would be doing if I never came to Monco and never conceptualized Ola, I think I would still be confused, because it's almost like an outlet, music, and translating, honestly, playing music, watching it go into the computer and then come back out. Like, that, in a sense, is what kind of drives me to keep doing this, because I don't know, I don't know where I'd be. Like, I would be confused still about myself and probably selling wine.
Well, being a musician and producer myself, I think that music is the most beautiful form of human expression and art possible. That's just my opinion. So I think the fact that you are making it more inclusive, that everyone can partake in that expression and that art form, is very important. But tell me a little bit about how maybe Ola technology could go beyond music.
So Ola has the ability to translate pretty much any type of frequency, which doesn't have to be audio wave, into, you know, that physical data. So we could take our phones and apply Ola technology, and it'd give you more accurate depiction of where your finger is on a screen, or even if you want to know, for example, you're getting a certain text from somebody, it'll vibrate a certain way, but to your, you know, to where you put your hand on your phone. So things of that nature. Driving, you could essentially use it. Now your car kind of jerks you, keeps you out of the lane. Ola would slowly give you alerts in a physical and even visual way. Hey, hey, no, 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 no. But you wouldn't feel that, like, motor, you know, the robotic resistance. It would feel more human. And then another aspect you could think of in application, medical devices. You know, we use a lot of robots now, and everybody, including surgeons and nurses, their eyes are split, same way we are in, you know, audio technology. So being able to kind of have that immediate physical feedback that you're getting close to dense tissue of that, you know, we don't really have that type of technology that delivers that almost instantaneous two-way sensory output. I might be thinking vague, but from all of my prior research, and what we were talking about before, how nobody's done it because everything's been so separated. So it really did take that cross wiring of my brain to be like, okay, like, this is something that I can work on, because nobody else maybe doesn't seem to care, or they just really haven't thought of it.
So whether you're sitting in your car, you're mixing in the studio, or unfortunately, you're in your hospital bed, Ola technology will be following you in the near future. And Mia has some very exciting plans in her near future that unfortunately we don't have enough time today to talk about. But hopefully you will be joining us again very soon to talk about those plans, Mia. And thanks again so much for joining us today on the show.
Thank you. Adios.